My job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
Welcome to the Black Girls Heal podcast, where we talk about healing our intimacy disorders, unresolved trauma, and building a healthy relationship with first ourselves and then others. Every episode, we will talk about advice you can apply today to break unhealthy patterns and grow in your self-worth. I'm Sheena Lachey, love addiction coach and trauma specialist. Let's begin. Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Black Girls Heal. Today, we are going to be talking about the secret ways that you can be love bombed. So typically when we think about love bombing in the realm of narcissistic relationships, we think about getting flown out. We think about bags and roses for no reason. We think about, 10-hour, 12-hour dates, being taken to the finest restaurants and all those things, and just being told we're the most amazing person ever and that there's never been one before us that has ever come close, right? Those types of things. However, with there being different types of narcissists and different types of narcissistic abuse, there is a secret, undetectable way that we can be love bombed if we are empathic, caring folks who typically are known to be fixers, where we can be very much attracted to narcissists in our lives and be connected to them in intimate relationships before we even realize that there's a problem. And also because of the way that this love bombing works, we will still personalize the problems that are happening in this relationship as being our fault or being related to us or our mindset or our expectations or our standards, instead of it being in the hands and responsibility of the narcissistic person that we are with. So in today's episode, I'm going to be breaking down what is the secret way that we can be love bombed by narcissists for it to be on our radar, and hopefully to enlighten those of us who may be in this pattern, those of us who have maybe been a part of this pattern in the past and we're recovering from it, to help you give some validation. And then also just to let those of you know who are in this cycle that you are not alone, that you're not making this up, and hopefully this will help you find your way out of it. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump on in.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.
Okay, so I have a question for you. On a scale of 0 to 5, where 0 is I don't think about it at all, and 5 is I'm fully connected, how on top of your hormone health are you? If you said 0 to 1, it is time to build that connection. Your hormones and your cycle are central to your overall functioning, and regulating your body will completely transform your mental, emotional, and physical health. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. And even though it helps for more than just menopause, Hormone Harmony is great for any horrible menopausal symptoms that put a woman's life on hold, like hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts, low mood, poor sleep, feeling tired all the time, bloating and gas, lower sexual desire. Hormone Harmony can help with all of those things. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code BGH at checkout.
Okay, so let's talk about it. So in today's episode, the secret undetectable way that we can be love bombed, I'm going to be talking about a technique that is used mostly by what is called vulnerable narcissists. So there were many episodes ago where I was talking about a relationship dynamic and was sharing how there were some comments that were saying that it sounded like what I was discussing was covert narcissism. And I said at the time how I didn't quite know if it fit. Then I went back and learned more about covert narcissism, and I was like, okay, it does feel a little bit more, but there was just something about the dynamic still that didn't just quite fit the relationship history that I was discussing in those episodes. And so recently, as I've just been learning more and exploring more just about all different types of relationship dynamics, I came across the phrase vulnerable narcissism. And a lot of times people will exchange covert narcissism for vulnerable narcissism, but the way that it may play out is different. So I will share more about the dynamics of virtual narcissism throughout this podcast, but just for you to know the two definition types, or at least my understanding of it, is when someone is a covert narcissist, this may be more undetectable. So it's not grandiose as far as someone is in your face, you know, doing all these big gestures. They may not be as egotistical, wanting to have attention, wanting to be having the spotlight on them, wanting to be the hero in the room, like a lot of other traditional types of narcissism may do. However, they still do have this experience of presenting as being a little bit more blameless, kind of saint-like in front of other people. They may not be the first one to talk or have conversations, but people typically think that they are nice people, that they are people who are friendly. They make good connections with others, but behind closed doors is where the abuse may happen. That's where they may start to dismantle the self-esteem of their loved ones. It's where they may be folks who rage, who are super critical, who discard and pick up and love bomb and do all the things behind the scenes, but in front of other people is a completely different story. Vulnerable narcissists, and I'm going to talk more about this again throughout today's episode. Vulnerable narcissists present as, for those when you're first meeting them, they present as almost the puppy dogs of the world. They are the ones who have been forgotten. They are the ones who've been looked over. They are the ones who are the diamonds in the rough. They are the ones who they just needed to have a little bit more opportunity, or people who cared about them. They are actually really amazing people who just didn't have the right people to believe in them. And they have a sad story typically. And so you, as someone who's typically very caring and empathic and giving, and maybe even a problem solver and a fixer, you hear their story and you think, I could help with that. Or that makes complete sense that you would feel these types of feelings based on what's happened to you. And where the covert narcissist, behind closed doors in secret, they may try to have power and have all these defenses of their ego by overpowering people, criticizing them, and all that other stuff. That's how their grandiosity presents behind closed doors while having this nice person image in the public. For vulnerable narcissists, they continually have this victimized, quiet, maybe sullen demeanor. But because you came in with a certain point of view, you don't see them as continually being in a victimized state. You see them as someone who has, again, really great potential, who is actually a really great catch, a really great opportunity. And I hate to say it that way, but a lot of times when you are in relationships with someone who is a vulnerable narcissist, they kind of become your project. They become your fixer-upper because you see all the ways that they may have gaps. And they also express just really wanting, they like wishing that someone would have given them the chance, wishing someone would have been more fair with them, wishing some other people would have just taken chances on them and kind of ruining the day that people, or saying that people are going to rue the day that they forgot about them because they're going to make it, right? And you see that energy, and you just think, yeah, absolutely. I see all the potential. I see all the things that you say you're doing and that you are, and you're talking about how you want it, and I actually think you're putting in action behind it. So of course, I'm going to connect to you. And of course, I'm going to help you out because you are who I want to be with. You are someone who I want to champion and to support, because I'm all about someone who is about making change and being the best versions of themselves. And so you don't hear in their story the excuses, and you don't hear in their story that there's a little bit more going on. So going back to the title of this podcast, which is, how is this love bombing? How does this relate to ways that someone may hook you in? Because love bombing is about seduction. Love bombing is about finding what is it that you need, what is it that you crave, what is it that your soul desires, and giving that to you, and giving it to you and flooding you with it. to where you get intoxicated with it and you want more and more of it. So in the traditional sense of love bombing, sometimes it does look like this deep, big verbal affirmation. And again, this kind of worshiping, and you are all that I want. I love you immediately. You're going to be my wife. You're going to be my partner. I want you to meet my kids. I want you to meet my family. Once our wedding dates, it could be financially, it could be giving large amounts of money and gifts and romantic gestures and all that stuff. All of that is very seductive for some of us. And some of us, we could really couldn't care less about it, or we may be more wary of it. For those of us who are fixers, those of us who are codependents, those of us who have been highly parentified, those of us where a big sense of our identity has been in being the savior for others and being the one who will self-abandon to kind of be the martyr and be the mom, again, to be the caretaker of the other folks around us, friends, family members, lovers, partners, and everybody else, the way that we are love bombed and the way that we are seduced is by this sad story. It's by this sad story, all this deep trauma that they share, all this series of almost opportunities. And us hearing that and them feeding this to us, and maybe even saying things like, you know, I never really talked about this before. You're such a good listener, or I really appreciate you not judging me for this, or I feel so comfortable for you. All of those things are so, so, so intoxicating to you, because those are the things that you deeply wanted to hear. How amazing you are, how needed you are, how special you are. And because you have been groomed to be a fixer your whole life, because your identity up until this point, probably in your healing, has been fixated around how good you are at solving other people's problems and connecting them with resources and all of those things. Here you have the biggest, most prime opportunity, the ultimate opportunity, because the prize is love. The prize is love with the prince or princess charming on the other side of this. Once all of their needs have been met, right? Once that anger is gone, once they get their money right, once they get their career on track, once whatever it is that they're saying is the only reason why they can't be happy. Again, this almost opportunity. Once that is fixed, then you're going to be free. They're going to be free to be happy. You're going to be free to ride off into the sunset. And it just so happens that what they're asking for, what they're needing, they're not even really asking you. They're just telling you their story, right? Which is also kind of unassuming, and you don't realize that this is part of a pattern that they do typically, especially because their story that they're telling you is usually a long list of people who've disappointed them, didn't fulfill their obligations to them. They broke their promises to them. They counted them out. So you don't hear in their past that this is probably something that has been reset and retold often. You hear someone who's been given a bad shake in life. So you are walking right into the scenario with whatever they're presenting you, because you're probably also very independent. You're probably very good at solving your own problems. And so whatever you hear them saying, you're like, oh, that's easy. I know someone who can help with that. I have the money for that. I have a therapist for that. Oh, I can connect you to a friend for this. I can be available for you for this. You need a place to stay. I can connect you to some housing here. You need a ride here. I got you. It all seems so simple until you realize down the road that these problems are always going to be perpetual and that they are not going to be solved. But let me pause there. That is what the love bombing looks like. Your deepest, most intoxicating need is to be needed, to be able to save, and to be loved. And so for someone to give you all of that on a piping hot platter, yes, yummy. I want more of it. Yes, sign me up, Captain. I'm here and I'm there. And then with the promise to continue to get the same affirmation that you got at the beginning, I never felt this way before. You're different than the other ones. You know, you understand me better than anybody else. You make me want to be a better person, whatever it may be. That is your set of love bombing. And what's interesting about this is because this type of love bombing is not really in your face and is not really obsessive in all that, all of those other things that I talked about with the more grandiose version of love bombing, you're amazing, you're beautiful, you're the best thing ever, da, 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 da. Even if that happens a little bit is not front and center. And a lot of times people who are vulnerable narcissists are have kind of have this failure to launch thing going on to where they may be adult people, but again, they are in this almost category. They're right on the cusp of having everything that they want. They're still building, they're still growing, they're still, if you listen to them, they're still grinding, they're still hustling. And so all of the romance and everything doesn't come with these big romantic overtures. And it doesn't always come with a lot of, you're the most beautiful person in the world. And I just think you're so special. The thing that is special about you is how good you are at listening to them and how good you are at helping them and how grateful they are for your help. Those are the things that are really affirmed. And so throughout the relationship, those are going to be the things that you are going to be more willing and desiring to protect because that's where you got your initial affirmation from before. So you're going to go through the entire relationship wanting to make sure you're staying fair, you're staying open to their point of view, to the experiences and traumas that they've had, to not want to be too judgmental or picky with what they're asking you for because you know that they are building, you know that they're going through some things. So you're not going to ask too much of them when you know that they're going through a hard time. You came into the relationship knowing this. So it'd be really unfair for you to ask for more, whether or not the more is attention, the more is money, the more is verbal affirmation and romance, the more is they're initiating, doing the work and the labor that it takes to build a relationship. You are not going to ask for that because you came into this knowing that this was a fixer-upper thing. You know, that's part of kind of the novelty and that you really kind of loved about this relationship, right? That y'all get to build and have this triumphant story together. And so it's not fair for you to go against that now. And then also, you don't realize that this is actually a need that a relationship should have. So, a common thing that I will hear folks talk about when it comes to words of affirmation as a love language or to be seen in that way is people will say, as they're doing their healing process, they kind of have these conflicting points of views of, I should be able just to affirm myself. I shouldn't really need other people to tell me. And I just feel like two things can be true. It could be true that your ultimate source needs to be yourself. But also, if you are sharing your mind, your body, your soul, your spirit with someone and you're building a life with them, they need to have a different level of adoration, care, and love for you. And they need to be expressing that to you. Not only expressing it to you with words, but showing it to you with action, initiating that they are actively trying to take care of you. You are a full human being that they have contracted, whether or not they've done it legally or spiritually in the cosmos, or just for this point in time because you're a girlfriend, girlfriend, boyfriend, girlfriend, partner, partner. Whatever it is, y'all have made a commitment to each other. And in their commitment to you, they are committing to see you as a whole human being that they are tasking themselves to love. So their task to love you has to start in their own mind and in their own intention. If this relationship is fueled by the fact that you are constantly asking them to notice you, to pay attention to you, to consider you when they're going through all their struggles and everything, to take their focus off of them and their pain and their sadness for just a second to consider you, and that's where the source of fights are coming from, if you even say anything, if you're not so used to living in neglect and in low self-worth and kind of stewing in that and wishing that you could just feel better on your own and not need somebody else to take care of me, not realizing that when we're talking about your partner has a different level and role in this, right? That out of all the people in the world, it is their responsibility to be available for you in this way. Of course, again, not the only source, not the ultimate source, but for sure a source. Right? That is why they are a partner and not just a friend or a colleague that you work with. There's another set of responsibilities that comes with. But because you attach to this person without needing that or seeing that, and that wasn't part of the seduction, the absence of that isn't really noted until you start to feel some depletion, start to feel a little bit achy on the inside, start to feel not good enough, or just like you just want some flowers, like you just want some roses, you just want a love note for no reason. You want them to just look at you in the eyes and tell you what you mean to them without it having to be attached to help or something. And a lot of times with a vulnerable narcissist is what happens is the original help that you started with is not enough. At first, they may be kind of grateful about it, but then afterwards, all the different connections and resources that you have for them, there's always a problem with it. So, say you connected them to someone who could help them with a job opportunity, money, business stuff, a therapist or something else. They always have something to say about that person. You know, they didn't have the right attitude. I didn't like their look. I didn't like how they got back to me. They waited too long. They waited a day too long to get back to me. I don't need that. They're a different race or whatever. I didn't like their, like, whatever it may be. It may be not enough money, or whatever they helped you with is, they will throw it back in your face and say, look, even though you helped me with this, it doesn't change the bigger problem. Like, yeah, it was one part of it, but I still need more this way. And so the original affirmation, care, thanks, appreciation that you got, gratitude that you received is no longer there. There's just more and more complaints and more how it's not enough. And they don't necessarily say it to where they're saying that what you did was not enough, but it is a defense mechanism to stop you from asking for more. It's to stop you for asking them, stop you from asking. Wait, how do you say that? Stop you from asking them. I think that's how you say it. To attend to you emotionally. To prioritize you romantically, to care for you in the ways that you deserve to be cared for in a romantic partnership. And it's a great way to project all of this stuff. Again, you came in as this empathic savior caregiver who understands their plight and understands that they're growing. So of course you're going to continue to give them space, right? You're going to continue to give them time to grow. You're going to still, you've been listening to this podcast, you've been talking to your therapist, you've been talking to whoever. So you're going to make your needs known, and you're going to take the fact that you are talking about this as you still standing up for yourself, but you're still staying in this relationship under the status quo until the next time that you can't take it anymore. You say what you feel. Maybe you get into a fight. Maybe you explode. And they may use that against you. They may use the fact that you are being very emotional and being very explosive as if you are the one who's dysregulated. And the thing about being in a relationship with a vulnerable narcissist, for the most part, is that there are not really a lot of explosive moments. There's not the knocking down, kicking, you know, yelling back and forth, calling each other out your name. I mean, it, of course, it does happen sometimes in some relationships, but for the most part, it's pretty quiet, because the relationship has been built on savior victim. And so it is a very typically low conflict model where you give and they take, and you give and they take, and you know, you like to give, and so you like to help, and they like to take and receive. And so it's a system that kind of feeds itself until you again start to get a bit of a whiff of something more that you need, and you're asking for it, and then there's conflict. And so because you may not have the connection to yourself to know that your feelings are valid and know that your needs are valid and know that you can ask and stand on things and not just ask and stand for them, but to actually expect them. And that if you are in relationships with people who are not giving that to you, that there is enough access to love and connection and care in the world to where you can, one, leave to find a relationship that has that available for you, and two, that it is okay for your normal stance to not be in relationships that drain you. When you have been in codependent, caretaking, parentified relationships, your normal base standard is to be in relationships where you're in the negative. So to be in a negative in this relationship feels like par for the course. It doesn't feel like anything unique. It's something you can take. So when other people, friends, family members, therapists, coaches, if you work with me, when they try to tell you that what's going on is unhealthy, you may feel like they're exaggerating a little bit. You may think that they, you know, you may see where they're coming from, but you may think that they are being a little bit unreasonable and not any of this understanding the situation. But what they see that you don't see is that you have been groomed to accept less than what you have, are worth forever. So when someone comes to you with, you know, let's say base levels is zero. When someone comes to you with the amount of effort that's like negative 10 or negative 20, you're like, great. That is, you know, I'm used to negative 30 in my family. So negative 20, that's awesome. Great. They are a step above. At least they're looking at me in my eyes. At least we get to cuddle and have sex. At least, you know, this person is doing some hobbies with me sometimes, you know, there's some mutual enjoyment that I never got in these other relationships before. So you see it as a step up, but other people can see that you're actually being drained. And it's not until you go deeper into this relationship and have more and more time, maybe more and more years together, that the impact of constantly having someone who's taking from you, never pouring into you, never giving to you, you're always having to hear their complaining, always having to hear their problems, always having to be the give the bright side and you know, be the voice of faith and be the voice of optimism. As that wears on you and you lose yourself and become a shell of yourself, then you start to kind of realize, oh wait, there's something going on here. And again, because you were never really attended to as far as being hyped up, being loved on, and people just celebrating you consistently, not just every once in a while, but consistently, you don't recognize the absence of it. So you should be in a relationship with someone who's your biggest fan. I have had so many conversations since the top of last year, more often than not, especially in the membership community with ladies who are in relationships that can be considered the married single mother phenomenon. Where you're in a committed partnership with someone, but that person is just very detached, and not just emotionally detached. They may be physically present, but they are very absent in the relationship. And so you are carrying all the emotional load and everything. And so one of the things that is common and that I've heard in a lot of folks' stories, not only in this past year, but just in stories that I hear in general, is that they are with a partner. And the woman is killing it. She is doing so many amazing things and she is having all these successes. And then the partner just is very indifferent about them. And these incidents that I'm thinking about right now is typically a heterosexual couple. And the man just doesn't care. He either downplays it. He says it's not that big of a deal. If he does mention it, it's not like a big expressive moment. It's like, oh, okay, well, that's good that that happened. And then they move on to the next topic. And those incidents are very deflating. And it's not just disappointing. It's not just, oh, like that, I wish they would have done something differently or I wish they would have said more. When that becomes your normal and your standard, day after day, month after month, year after year, to be in an intimate relationship, especially if you're living with someone, especially even if you're not living with them, if this is an intimate relationship that you are talking with all the time, every day, and this is their kind of level of indifference towards you and your highest, biggest moments, it absolutely affects how you see about how you see yourself, how you feel about yourself, what you think you're worth. It absolutely, by nature of them not seeing the worth in what you're doing, you absolutely internalize that when it starts to slow decline and slow decay on the inside until you start to take care of yourself and take care of your needs and know that these things are worth celebrating and be around other relationships and other people who celebrate you more to have that contrast and to see, huh, this is how these people talk to me and how these people show up for me versus this is how my partner does it.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. Let's take a quick break to say thanks to this week's sponsors.
As our country continues to grow and make new meaning of the intersection between current and historical events, it is so important to stay connected to the voices and the leaders who are influencing what progress, connection, equality, and truth mean to us as Black people. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection from some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths on NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
So the thing about vulnerable narcissists that also throws people off because they don't come with this big, overt sense of red flags that we can see in a lot of other traditional types of narcissism is we think that all the qualities are not present, but they are there. The lack of empathy, the grandiosity, the entitlement, the discarding is all there, but it's under this sullen guise. So the lack of empathy. So when you first start in a relationship with someone who's a vulnerable narcissist and they're sharing their sad backstory, you may reflect back with your own backstory and your own traumas. And they may originally at first really listen to it. And they may also, you know, say something that's supportive or say, wow, I'm sorry that happened to you, or that sounds really wrong, and da da da. And so that initial conversation or set of conversations sets the standards for how you think the rest of it is going to go. But just like in all traditional forms of narcissism, that love bombing is only at the very beginning before it starts to slip. And so you keep trying to reach out if you have a conflict with this person, if you're trying to communicate your needs to this person, if you're feeling neglected or forgotten by them. You may try to reach out to this person that you originally thought was open and honest and emotionally available because they shared this really vulnerable experience with you. So they are totally in touch with their emotions, right? So you keep trying to appease, or you keep trying to talk to that part of them that you thought you connected to at first. So I'm going to share with you how what you're doing or what you're not doing is hurting my feelings. I'm going to share with you and really try to connect to that part of you to have some empathy with the fact that I'm feeling neglected and I'm feeling forgotten. And you told me when we first met that these were the things that that people did to me in the past that shouldn't have happened. And you expressed so much care and concern. So I'm going to keep talking to you about these things, hoping that that part of you arises because I've seen it before, right? I know it's there. I know we're just having a fight right now, but I know if I can talk to you about this enough, I know if we can have just the right amount of communication, I know if we can find the right therapist to really help us bridge this gap, that same person that I connected to that had that empathic care for me is going to return. But you don't realize that that was just part of the love bombing, and that is not actually who they are. They are someone who is used to being more consumed with what they need and what they want. And so anything outside of what benefits them, they do not have any empathy for. So it does not benefit them to go outside of their own comfort level to either make more money for the household, to be more expressive to you without there having to be a fight first, to do romantic gestures for you, to really study you and figure out what it is that you need. They have their own stuff going on. And so they lack the empathy of how this is impacting you because of their own care and concern, which leads to that entitlement, right? What they need and what they want is the most important. And there's a grandiosity to where they feel like their stories and their problems are more important than yours. This has not changed. And some of you may know this, depending on your background, this has not changed even when there's children involved. They are still the victim. They are still the folks that people aren't paying enough attention to them, that, you know, they're expecting things of them that's not fair. You know, this what about me is really, really prevalent in this type of person. And also when we think about narcissism being about control and keeping folks in their power. So we've already talked about the guilting, right? So anytime you try to talk about what you need and what you want, you're being unfair. They're asking you to wait. They're playing on your sympathy to get things status quo, to get you to continue to attend to what they need, to save them, to give them more time, to give them more connections, to stop complaining altogether and just wait and be patient because they're working on it, whatever it may be. So they may also create conflicts and issues for you to solve, whether or not it's in their life or in your personal relationship, really kind of being a stick in the mud instead of being able to move forward. And now you have to kind of solve the problem around them instead of solving it with them. And
or kind of creating a whole life and system where you stop depending on them to be involved in certain issues. Again, I talked about how the way that they control is by sabotaging your sense of self-worth. So very much downplaying your accomplishments, who you are, and what you're worth. A lot of times it does not come with, at least initially, it does not come with direct insults. It does not come with them saying that you're dumb or you're stupid or whatever else. It's just this flat, neutral indifference to who you are. You know, you could be solving cancer and like be this well-known scientist, and they will treat you, and this is no shade, but they will treat you as if you erected a lemonade stand on a corner and you're selling pints of lemonade every week, you know, and have the same amount of interest and care and celebration around what you do and what you contribute to this world, which is, you know, nothing. You know, if you met a child who is selling lemonade in the corner, you might at most be like, oh, that's so good, baby. You may even congratulate their sense of ambition. And if you're a very positive person, you would just know that they're planting seeds for them to be an entrepreneur in the future, right? But then you would move on to something else. And it's almost like if you're in this type of relationship with someone who doesn't see you, it's almost like they kind of pat you on the head energetically. They're like, oh, that's nice. That's good. You know, and just completely downplay again, your identity and what you bring. And so that absolutely knocks down your self-worth. You have been groomed to not expect anything outside of, I really appreciate how you helped me and thank you for being a good listener. So all the other extra stuff, the romance, the care, the dates, the affirmation, the validation, all that, none of that was part of the relationship to begin with. And so you don't really expect it, and you feel, actually you do start to expect it, and you feel bad about expecting it, or you get punished by them for expecting it later on. So the more that you can have a lower self-worth and doubt the fact that you even deserve to ask for it, and also internalize that it's your fault for not having high standards in the first place, or that you shouldn't need someone to give these types of things to you, the more that they win and they get to keep things at status quo. This also absolutely leads to isolation, which is another hallmark of narcissistic abuse, isolating from friends and family and loved ones. So they may say how they don't quite like other family members and friends that you have or don't quite get along. A lot of times vulnerable narcissists present as having some symptoms of social anxiety, feeling really uncomfortable being around people, being very shy, highly introverted, not really knowing what to say. So you may at first just not invite them along, or because you're a couple, you may stop going to things a lot. And it's not because this person told you to not go, but it's easier to stay home. It's easier to not have to answer questions about where the partner is. It's easier to not have to bring them along and then have to do damage control based on whatever things they're saying or not saying. And so eventually you may just stop hanging out as much with friends and family and loved ones. And then again, your sense of self-worth is being impacted. And so when your self-worth is impacted, you have less desire to do things for yourself, to hang out with friends, to do your hobbies, to spend money on yourself to make you feel, to look good and to feel good, to go on trips, to do all these other things, especially in the case of vulnerable narcissism. Usually because of the failure to launch, there's always a money component that comes with it, where you may be the one who's putting in a lot of financial power and contribution. So the things that you used to be able to do before, you may not be able to do as much anyways, because you are helping this person, putting out fires for them, paying for school for them, paying for certifications for them. You're, you know, investing in some things for them. And so you're losing my access to yourself because you think that you're investing in someone or something that's going to have a return later on, but it doesn't. So how does this type of relationship usually end? Well, my hope is that by you hearing things like this, if you are in this type of relationship, that you actually hear it. I pray deep in my soul that you hear it, and that you Google vulnerable narcissism and go down whatever rabbit holes you can find to see if this connects to you. If you have a partner or a loved one who's always the victim, always complaining. Victim is a strong word, because a lot of times when, especially in the earlier stages, you can be very, very protective of this person because of their story of people who've counted them out. You know, they said that they were never going to be anything. They didn't believe in them. And so you are their biggest champion. You are their biggest celebrator. And so you are defensive of anyone who even seems like they are talking down or looking at your partner as if they're less than. And my hope is that you still, if you're still listening to this point in the podcast, that you go on your Googles and you look up some vulnerable narcissism topics just to rule it out, just to see what people say about vulnerable narcissism versus covert narcissism. Because if you do covert, you may get the first type that I said before, which is may not be your experience. If you're listening to this and this is not your experience, but you know that this is someone who is, this isn't their experience, I would suggest that you get on your Googles too. If you want to send them this podcast, you can. And or you can get on your Googles and find like a quick checklist of what a vulnerable narcissist is. But I would really encourage you to send this as a resource or something else to help them hear what may be happening. And it might not be what's happening. It might just be you're with someone who is depressed. Because that is one of the things that when you're in this type of relationship and you're kind of scanning it and you're looking to see what the issue is in your mind, especially if you are very self-aware and you're into the healing community and into mental health, you can recognize, even if you're not a mental health professional, you can recognize, oh, they're probably depressed. They're probably just anxious. They probably, you know, just have some complex PTSD, and that's what this is. And so for some people, maybe they are in a relationship with someone who is depressed and all they need is either some medication or some intervention, mental health intervention, and things will get better. And sometimes we are with folks who have the symptoms of that because of their psychopathology. What we think is a temporary, easy fix is not something that is just momentary, that this is a chosen path by them. When we think about all the other types of narcissism, we're coming to a place as a people to where we understand that narcissistic personality disorder is a chronic, lifelong condition. Even when there are interventions to help folks who experience narcissistic personality disorder, there's a very, 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 very low percentage of people who even go to therapy. For sure, go to therapy on their own volition, and then on the other side of that, complete treatment, because the basis of narcissistic personality disorder is that I'm not the problem, everybody else is. So you asking me to go, why would I go? Why would I go to this person? And especially with a vulnerable narcissist, even if you do find someone for them, because they're not going to find the person themselves, and most they'll say that they'll go if you find someone. If you happen to get them to go, they are not going to put in the effort. They are going to, and that includes even if they're physically there in session. They may be there and just be there and talk, and then after the session, say all the things that they didn't say before, or say why they feel like the therapist didn't really make any sense, or why it wasn't fair, or not do the homework, or, you know, again, just kind of have this energy of buying time. But the point is, whether or not a person is a narcissist, or whether or not a person is has some mental issues, some mental disorders that are legitimately affecting their ability to function in a relationship, it is still your responsibility to figure out, if this issue does not change, is this something that I can live my life with? And as someone who may be very prone to abandon yourself and lose yourself, even though you're starting to become depressed, even though you're having panic attacks, even though you can't sleep, even though you're either gaining weight or losing weight, even though you are having lack of interest in life and you're losing your friends, even though you're losing your hair, even though all this stuff is happening, you will hear someone proposition that and say, can you live with this forever? And you'll immediately say yes, because you're not used to considering yourself, and you're not used to considering how these relationships and all how these things impact you. And I really want to urge you for one moment to consider that you are worth the care, attention, and concern that you are so readily, and generously giving to everybody else, including your partner, that maybe you deserve to give that to yourself. Maybe. So going back to how this ends, usually, is not uncommon for folks to stay in relationships with these folks for a long period of time because everything that happens is so passive, so subtle. These folks are typically very passive aggressive versus aggressive aggressive, very petty. And they may turn the things that you shared with them and turn it against you and kind of really dismantle your ability to care for yourself to where you just stop fighting until you start to hear something else. And so, either sometimes what happens is people will have a lot of physical issues that contribute to their health, and they may start to have a shortened life expectancy, and or have other mental health disorders based on the stress of this relationship and the emotional abuse, that does not seem like it's emotional abuse, but it is emotional abuse and neglect that's in the relationship. Sometimes they get to the point on the other side of that is they get to that point and then they're like, something's got to change, and they realize that it's the relationship. Because of how this presents, you may have a lot of guilt, either because of the time that you've invested in this partnership or because they are really no better than they were before. You know, they still have the same amount of excuses. So you may try to get them equipped and get them connected to a resource or to a friend, or get them reconnected to long lost family members that they're not talking to anymore, or other folks, so that you feel a little bit more ease in leaving, because otherwise you feel like you're abandoning them just like everybody else. And again, you still see the fantasy. You see the fantasy of who you thought this person was in the first conversation. You didn't see who they actually were. You saw the picture of who they painted themselves to be, which is not real. And that is the image that you've been chasing this whole time, whether or not it's 3 months, 3 years, or, you know, longer. So you have this image, this kind of saint-like image of this person that you would really feel a whole lot of guilt and regret to abandon. Instead of realizing that this is a person who has perpetually chose this lot in life, and once you exit, there's going to be somebody else. In fact, if you actually kind of sit and think about it, depending on how much of their past you now know and where you are in this process, there's probably a very short time period between their connection with you and their connection with somebody else. These types of folks, the way that they navigate through life is this story, this way of seeing life, this presented sense of helplessness. What makes them seem like they're so fragile is actually their superpower. They will always find someone to help take care of them. Always. That you don't have to worry about them being in a homeless shelter. It won't happen. You do not have to worry about them being on the street. It won't happen. They have other people probably lined up to help take care of them. That's the other thing. You know, when I was looking up resources on this, very few people talked about this, but I'm going to put this here as far as how this ends. Cheating and other types of betrayal also happens because this person feels so disempowered, especially if you are continually winning or you have some status above them or you have some access to something that they don't. They need to feel empowered in some way. And if they can't feel more empowered by picking fights with you or, you know, making you apologize for things that haven't happened or whatever else, they will seek some type of connection outside of the relationship a lot of times to feel more powerful. So whether or not it is flirting, or whether or not it is getting on dating apps, or whether or not it is actually sleeping with other people, those types of betrayal is very common for them to feel like they have a one up on you, whether or not you know it or not. And then again, another way that this works is that you just become of a shell of a person and just accept what's happening, which I guess was the first one. But in the first one, I talked more about the physical impact of it, but just emotionally, you will lose a lot of your self-esteem, access to your self-worth, maybe some friends and loved ones because of what you had to give up to stay in this relationship. So the way out. The way out, the way out, the way out. The way out that I typically tell folks who I see are in this type of relationship is just start focusing on yourself and your own self-care and your needs. A lot of times when I meet people who are in this type of partnership, they are so conflicted with all the guilt, and you know, especially if there's happens to be children involved, but the investment that they have, whether or not it's time, energy, money, whatever. And again, they're connected to the fantasy of who this person, who they thought this person was, the relationship that they thought it was. And the longer that they're with this person, the more that they had to defend themselves, defend other people, their own ego gets in the way. They don't want to look dumb. They don't want to look bad. And so, and them trying to mitigate all that and trying to find the best, easiest solution to prove that they didn't make the wrong decision and to prove that they didn't waste time and to get the best outcome and the person not be mad at them and the person to be in the best position and them to not leave with less than they came with, they will get lost in the muck. And the most important person in this equation that's been forgotten is you. And so once you start focusing on taking care of yourself and what you need and having new boundaries around your energy, your money, around sex, stop sleeping with someone that makes you feel like shit. Like you get to determine what works for you. Go in taking care of your hair, go in taking care of buying clothes that you feel good in, going places just for fun by yourself, even if they don't want to come with you. Start to reclaim yourself. And once you have a deeper connection to you, you're going to be able to figure out what's right and what's wrong. So you're going to be able to hear, once you have a higher self-worth, you're going to be able to hear through this podcast if this applies to you or if this doesn't quite apply, but it gives you a hint of what's needed in this relationship. And now you get to go with more confidence and more self-assurance to request, make, stand in the changes that you want. And because you have more high self-worth, either the person that you're with is either going to respond to that because based on your hunch that they see you as worthy and as a partner, they are going to respond to it and attend to that and meet you where you are and the relationship will be fixed. Or the possibility is you have this higher self-worth, you know what you're worth, and you go and you make this request to this person and they do not respond. And their lack of response does not mean you're not worth it. Their lack of response is based on their own brokenness and their own perspective. And it may be that, again, you were attached to the fantasy of who you thought this person was and how you thought they saw you, but that hasn't been real. And that can be something that's really, really hard for you to grapple with, especially if you've had a long period of time with this person, especially if you've had children with this person. Grieving that you are under that level of deception for so long is hard. It is hard. It feels embarrassing. It feels humiliating. It feels like something that you wish you didn't even have to experience. So it's easier to ignore it. But what I'm telling you right now, what I hope that you got is that you have one life, my love. You have one life and you've lost so much of it. And especially if you have children who've watched this experience, they have watched this happen. And it is, I've also heard that kids will watch this happen and they will start commenting to you about it because they see the dynamics and they see when people are sad and they see when people are angry and they see when people are being mean to each other and they see everything. They know more about you sometimes than you know about yourself. They sense it before you do. And so the best gift you can give your children is a healthy home. And so you're the one who gets to decide what makeup that healthy home looks like. And the best way for you to make that discerning decision, because it's your life, you're the one who has to live it, not this voice behind the podcast, not your therapist, not your friends, you're the one who has to live it. The voice you need to listen to is your own. And the best way that she's going to make that decision is to feed her health, confidence, care, pleasure, and love. And when she is well fed, she is not going to lead you wrong. Okay, that's a voice that you can trust. So I hope that you found this podcast helpful. Again, share with anyone who may need it. And I hope that all my fixers and my lovers and my codependents and my givers hope for you to know that you being that person is not a bad thing. It's not a weakness. It is not a weakness that is actually part of your superpower. The only problem is that there's been someone who's had access to that maybe a little bit longer than they needed to. And so once you heal whatever it is that you may need to heal, that may come from the heartbreak of this realization, you are still free to love. And so now you just have more discernment to make sure that you're giving this love to people, to entities that are ready for it and that truly receive it with gratitude and do something with it versus always finding a problem with it and never following through with the gift that you've given them. So that is it for today's episode. I'm sending you all so much love, and I will see you in the next one.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.